If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Being in the market, like physically going to visit the market and understanding the dynamics of the market so that you can come up with these ideas and understand how to create real value beyond what you have on paper and beyond what you have.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Hey, Stoney and Lennon, welcome to the show.
What's up, man?
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, man. Pleasure's all mine. You know, normally I read bios when people first come on the show, but since there's two of you here today, do you mind kind of giving our listeners just a quick snippet about who you are so they have an understanding of who it is they're listening to?
Yeah. Stoney, go for it.
Okay. Stoney Stonebreaker. I live in Coral Gables, Florida, and been investing in commercial real estate now for about 5-6 years, although I've invested over my whole entire career. I started my career as an engineer and worked in the space program way back in the day, and then got involved with utilities and managed their tech stuff, their telecom stuff and their department. And then I went to invest throughout my career and got involved in real estate a little early with some investments throughout my career. But then later on, I got into it full time. And so we've been in it full time now for the past 5 years or so.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. And Lennon, you?
Yeah. So I'm originally from Venezuela. That's in Latin America. Moved to the United States in 2010 and been investing with my family in residential real estate since then. But then we moved into commercial real estate about 6 years ago. Started investing as limited partners in syndications, and then eventually started raising capital and doing my own deals. And alongside Stoney as well, we invested together and we've done some multifamily real estate investments and private offerings together. I'm also the host of Se Habla Real Estate, which is basically the first real estate investing podcast in Spanish. We've been doing that for a couple of years. And right now I'm a principal. Stoney is the same thing. We're both principals at Pasivo Real Estate Investments, which is just private equity real estate investment firm where we open up the opportunity to busy professionals and just real estate investors in general to passively access and invest in commercial real estate.
Gotcha. So when did you guys form your partnership and your firm?
Formal partnership, is it a year and a half, Stoney, ago?
Roughly? About that, yes. Mm-hmm.
But we've been investing and doing deals together as different entities for a few years, like 4 or 5 years now.
Right, right, right. Oh, that's really cool. Talk to us about and Lennon, I'm going to ask you this. You said initially, one, you're from Venezuela. So you came to the States, you started investing in residential real estate. At what point in time did you decide that it was no longer the way to go and that you should start looking at larger deals?
Basically 5 or so years into the initial investments, where we realized that the return on the equity wasn't attractive anymore. Basically, we bought all these properties in cash. A lot of the Latin American investors, that's what we typically used to do anyway, and come into this country, look for condos in the best area in town, buy a few of them, cash, and then that's it. You know, we were kind of lucky because we bought at the bottom of the market in 2009, so the investments went well. But eventually, again, we had all that equity sitting there, and the returns weren't as attractive anymore. And it was a little bit of a hassle to do the landlord job, right? Like 1 a.m. calls and dealing with tenants and the whole thing. So we decided to look for opportunities that made more sense, not only returns-wise, but when it came to the amount of time that we were spending managing the whole thing. So basically, that's to say we were looking for a more passive opportunity with better returns, overall, you know, better risk-adjusted returns. We found commercial real estate to be that vehicle.
Sure, sure, sure. And Stoney, what about you?
Yeah, I invested throughout my career in mostly vacation condos. I rented them out in Florida and in North Carolina, bought some land as well. And so I had a limited amount. I was so focused on my tech career, I didn't spend as much time on real estate but I really liked it. And so finally, after I retired, I did some consulting with some startups and early stage companies for a while. But then I rekindled my love for commercial real estate. And that's when I got back into it. Been investing as a limited partner and a general partner in a number of deals, mostly with Lennon.
Gotcha. So what was the first deal that you took down, Lennon?
Yes. So in commercial real estate, it was a deal as a limited partner, 278 units in Dallas. We just invested as limited partners. That deal went fabulous. 14% cash on cash the first year. Ultimately, we sold. It was a 5-year business plan. The deal ended up selling after 2.5 years, almost 3 years. And we actually did a refi on that deal after 12 months. We got 10% of our equity back while still keeping our entire participation in the deal. So ultimately, yeah, it was like a 24% IRR. Yeah, just the type of deal that you don't really see anymore unless you're taking a little bit more risk than what we were taking then. But that was an apartment complex, obviously, yeah.
Right. Well, it's the type of deal you don't see anymore. And if you do see those, you know, written down as projections of the type of deal you probably run from, because you say you guys are gambling at this point. So it's always fun. I mean, you just can't underwrite to home runs. Those are tough. But when they happen, it certainly is fun. And the same question for you, Stoney, when you got, what was your first large multifamily project?
It was a deal with Lennon, and it was also in Texas, in Dallas. Yeah, not the same deal; it was a different one. But it's on the market for sale right now, and we haven't followed it that closely. But got that, and really enjoyed that. That's worked out fine, and we're looking to move on to some additional deals beyond that.
Yeah.
Right. And so that was both a limited partnership. That next deal that you invested in was an LP as well.
Stoney was an LP on that one, and I was both an LP and I am that, because still the deal's on the market. It's under contract. We're actually closing next week in May. Anyway,
buying or selling?
We're selling. Yeah, we're selling. We're selling that one. Yeah. After 3 years now, I think.
Gotcha. Okay. That's super cool. So what's it been like growing a partnership and looking for deals to take down together?
Yeah, it's been, definitely fun. Challenging, obviously. You always, it's always easier, quote unquote, when you don't have to deal with anyone else, but then it's harder because you have to do everything, right? But partnerships are at the core of what we do, basically. Even as a business model at our current company right now, that's what we do. We not only build partnerships with our investors, of course, and educate them and try to grow our investor base by building relationships of trust with them. But then also, on the other hand, our model is to partner up with different teams and different operating partners across the country. So the core of what we do is conversations and due diligence on people and, understanding their track record, how they work, how they think. And so we can ultimately build a partnership with them that can benefit our other partnership, which is our investors. So it's a big deal for us. And a lot of challenges. Obviously, you have times where you don't necessarily agree with your partners. You have to understand how to delegate and understand what your weakness are and what the strengths of your partners are and how to manage all that. But ultimately, if done right, then it allows you to just go faster and further, I guess.
Yeah, I would think that that's absolutely true. Stoney, being an engineer, I would imagine that you have a very systematic approach to your business and your investing. So how have you guys figured out how to divvy up responsibility, define roles, things like that?
Right. Yeah, we're both engineers, so we don't want to take anything away from Lennon on that standpoint either.
I'm sorry.
Lennon's more the investor relations person and capital raising for us. I do more of the deal analysis, forging relationships with sponsors, and also working with developing our work processes so that we can have and scale in the future. I was also part of a group that won the Deming Prize back in the 1980s, one of the first companies involved in the quality movement here in the United States, and got to study under W. Edwards Deming himself as part of that. But that was very process oriented. So we like to put together a process, have our checklists. Also, earlier in my career, I was a pilot, so I'm used to checklists and so forth that, you know, even though you know everything you're supposed to do, you don't want to forget anything. And so that helps as a reminder. And that kind of thing we develop with video recordings of the process and going through. And so that helps. That will help us as we bring people on board to help them learn how we want like to do processes.
You mentioned something there as you bring people on board. So talk to us about some of the people you've brought on board and what that process looks like.
We have, I'll let Lennon talk about that. He's done the most in the social media and marketing area.
Yeah. So yeah, like Stony said, I'm more on the investor relations, but also on the kind of content creation and marketing and education side of things for our investors, just for people in general. And that's really right now, that's the only place where we formally have brought people to the company. Well, not necessarily formally in the sense of W-2 employees, but we build a team around our marketing area. And it's been challenging, and because it's hard to find people that are ready to perform like you want them to perform, right? I mean, it's almost impossible, really. So it's a matter of, okay, bringing them on board and then educating them and actually working with them to so they can understand what is it that you want to do and that they do it right and all that stuff. And then also understanding that eventually or ideally they'll be able to do it better than you can. So we started looking for, basically we have two virtual assistants, and this is through a virtual assistant company or agency in Venezuela, you know? So I reached out to them via Upwork initially, and then we brought our relationship outside of Upwork and initially started working with one VA, and then the workload was a little bit too much for her, and then they brought another one and we're working with them. Sometimes you gotta be a little bit more involved than you would like to be on some of these things, but it's part of the job. And like Stony said, a lot of it is making sure you have processes in place that you go over with them and make them understand what is it exactly, the steps that they need to take. And then obviously being on top of them a little bit until it just becomes part of, or I guess, second nature for them and for everyone in the team. But yeah, initially it was just that we tried Fiverr, we tried Upwork, we tried working with different people for website design, for just designs in general, social media management, so distribution of content, some content creation as well, the whole thing, until ultimately right now, the way we're structured is that Stony and I, basically we create the content, we put it in a place, and they now know where to go, take the content, do whatever they need to do in terms of editing and creating posts and designs and stuff, and then going to having the right tools. We looked at different tools for the distribution of this content in social media. And now they were able to find the right one to automate this distribution. And, you know, just go through the whole process. But yeah, basically they're helping us with that, all that area, and just marketing in general.
Right. Yeah. And those are challenging things, you know, especially on the creative side.
Yeah.
I think when you're working with virtual assistants, it's one thing to say, okay, here's a screencast-o-matic, do X, Y, Z. It's another thing to say, hey, here's a piece of raw video, make something cool out of it. Right.
Yeah.
So if you figured out how to do that, hats off to you, because that is, I think, like you said, it's a learning curve and probably took a little while going back and forth to get that to get that right. Let's talk more about the deals you guys are investing in. You said, I think you said this, Stony, that you guys are really finding other sponsors that you're bringing more the capital to. Is that right? Or what's your structure look like today?
Yes. What we want to do is forge relationships with what we'll call a co-GP. We'll be co-GP. They'll be the lead GP, if you will. They'll be in a certain market that we like, and they'll bring deals to us, and we'll help not only raise money, but also raise equity, but also be a part of their GP team. We sometimes can bring on a fractional CFO for financial advice, do some of the marketing, help with the asset management, and bring on other people who are in the financial analysis area and tax strategy as well to help bring some additional value to the GP team.
That's fantastic. And what has that been like as you vet general partners and as you vet other lead sponsors? Like, what are some criteria that you have as you look at potential partners?
Well, we want our GPs to be experts in the local market. We can't be, you know, an expert in every market as much as we'd like to be. So we have a few that we've looked at and we've been to a number of times ourselves. But and so those we feel more comfortable investing in if a partner in that market brings us a deal. But other deals could be a possibility for us. And we just don't know that market. But we have some resources to us available to us as well. We have, I'm a CCIM as well. And so we have some database that's got some good demographics and extra database information that is not normally available to other people on that. And what we'll do is we'll forge some deals where we want to look at a certain criteria. We got a checklist of about 10 or 12 items that are absolute go, no-go decisions and help us screen out a deal right away. And so that will help us keep focus on the deals that do pass our criteria. And we'll do some more analysis on that, which I do the underwriting on that, and we'll look at those over. But we really like to have deals that are, at one time, we only took deals that were 100 units and above, but that space is just so crowded. We're in the value add multifamily space, 100 units and above. And those deals are, I mean, it's just so such a competitive space now. The last 5 years, to 8 years, there's been so many more coaches involved and people getting this training in this area. It's really competitive. So people are overpaying some of the prices. So we've moved actually some of our criteria down into smaller units, smaller size properties, maybe from 40 to 80 and 100 units, and also into some secondary or tertiary markets that we might not have considered in the past.
Interesting. So how have you seen, I think that's interesting, you guys have gone down in size. You know, typically it goes the other way, but you have to go where there's still value that can be created. So how are you handling property management on some of these smaller assets?
Well, that's a good question, because that's critical, of course. And we always try to get referrals to companies that, especially from local brokers that we know, because we especially have good relationships with brokers in most of the markets that we're in. And that's critical to us. And we like to get referrals from them to the local people in that market. And we then interview them and go meet them themselves and try to get and speak with some of their customers as well, and their investors.
Yeah, right now we're building out of those relationships with and basically creating our roster of property managers for the smaller deals. So two things, right? One, the first is that we haven't really done a deal. The smallest deal that we've done is 138 units. So we straight up, it's basically institutional level property management and all that so far. But for the smaller deals, we plan on building relationship through the recommendations from the brokers that we know and build a relationship with. There are actually very professional property management companies that solely focus on the smaller deals. So harder to find. They're not that many, but they're there. And then also some of the potential partners that we're gonna that we have a relationship with for those smaller deals have either the interest or the capability to do the management internally. Okay. So again, we haven't really done a small deal yet, but whenever we do it, it's going to be one of those two. But it's definitely a good question, because it's always the same. You know, you always hear, okay, you should go or you need to go 100 units plus because the property management is more professional and this and that. And that's certainly true. But like everything, there's pros and cons on both spaces, you know. But yeah, that's.
As you guys vet deals, is there a possibility that you could have your smaller units? I don't know if you've looked at this on a map or if you've kind of even thought through this to where you can have one property management company that the deals may be close enough or in proximity to each other that you could have one property management company to manage multiple assets.
Yeah, that's kind of an ideal scenario if you are able to find an opportunity. And that's the creative side of things as well. And that's one thing that on our Jacksonville deal basically gave us the advantage, and not necessarily the property management aspect, because this is 138 units, but what I refer to is the creative side and being not only creative, but also being in the market, like physically going to visit the market and understanding the dynamics of the market so that you can come up with these ideas and understand
how to create real value beyond what you have on paper and beyond what you have in an OM that the broker sent you. So that's a big deal for us. We always like to, if we're going to do a deal, we're 100% going to go to that market. We're going to drive the market, build relationships, and just get to know the market beyond the numbers on a piece of paper.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's an absolutely fantastic point you make there, is getting beyond the numbers, because you can with the right creativity add value to deals, maybe that, and that's, you know, that's the ultimate value add, I think, is when you can see something that somebody else can't and say, oh, okay, I can do this, and we're going to turn this and really make a nice return that's above maybe what they were projecting.
I guess one thing I wanted to add to what Stoney was saying about building a relationship with other operators and other sponsors is that I guess the reason that's important for us is because, and the reason why we kind of decided that this is going to be the model and the structure that we want to have for our deals and Passivo, it's because one of the biggest risks that we were able to identify in commercial real estate, especially in the space that we are, where you do have some sort of construction management to do, and like there's a lot of moving parts, is the execution risk, right? So who's the team behind it? How well is the team prepared? What's the track record? And how are they able to execute the business plan? That's something that we figure, well, it's easy, quote unquote, easy to diversify across markets, right? We just go to another market, analyze and build relationships, buy a deal in different markets. Great. So if you're a company that you only do your own deals and that you have your own team and that's it, then you can diversify in different markets, across markets, but and you can also even diversify across different asset classes, right? Maybe multifamily, maybe you do industrial, office, whatever else. But it's one team that's executing everything, right? So the way we saw it, and the reason we saw it like this, is because before anything else, we're passive investors and limited partners. And the way we look at things is from that perspective before anything else. So we decided, well, if we want to be in the commercial real estate, in multifamily, in the workforce housing, Class B, value add, we love this space. It's our main vertical, our main focus. And if we want to be there, how do we further mitigate the downside? Well, we're going to be in different markets that we analyze and that we like. We're going to eventually maybe move across different asset classes within cash flow and commercial real estate. But then how do we diversify across teams, right? Well, every passive investor knows that they shouldn't be investing only with one sponsor and that's it. Well, same thought process, but we're doing it more of at a more professional level, because this is what we're doing full time. So basically, once we build this relationship with different sponsors, we vet them, we meet them in person, which is paramount for us. The personal relationship, it's huge. And once we have that relationship built, once they put a deal in front of us, we're going to do our own underwriting, our own analysis, our own professional analysis in general of the whole deal. And at that point, we become one with them. If we decide that we want to do this deal as passive investors ourselves, then we become one. And at that point, it's not necessarily like the lead sponsor versus non-lead sponsor. Like, it's just one sponsor team, you know? So that's how we think we are going to be able to do that. We let our operating partners do the day-to-day operations, because that's what they do. They're experts in that market, in that niche. And we take care of the macro analysis, macro asset management, and help them and bring value in different ways to the team on that side. But that allows us to not be tied on a day-to-day thing, and allows us to go out, build more relationships, and provide ultimately better quality and better quantity deal flow to our investor base. So that's kind of the way we look at it.
Right. No, I love that. I love that. And there's a lot of good things in that I think you guys are doing that'll reap benefits for you here in the future. Let's jump into the final four. I don't know if you guys want to ping pong these back and forth, sure, and each of you answer the question, or if each of you just want to take, here, let's do it this way. Each of you take one question, and then we'll, we'll each get a chance to answer. The first question is this, and this will go to you, Lennon. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
So yeah, that's a great one. I would say that just be focused but flexible. Okay. I think that focusing in one specific strategy and being an expert on your niche basically that's super valuable, but be humble enough to understand when you need to be flexible. So yeah, humility, it's a big one.
Right. Yeah. I love that. Tony, let me ask you this. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
I read constantly. I'm reading a book every week, basically. And I'm just, I'm either reading or looking at YouTube classes or Udemy or things like that. And so that really is something I've always done and I always enjoy doing and helping, getting new ideas to bring to my work.
A book a week, that's ambitious. You must be a fast reader.
Well, I read, and I have Kindle, and I have, all of the, Audible. So while I'm walking my dog, you might have heard was snoring out behind me here earlier. I'm always trying to take advantage of spare time.
Right. No, I love that. I love that. This one's for you, Lennon. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Oh man, that's at the core of what we do as investors and as operators of real estate. We're ultimately always coming into these properties and trying to provide better housing. And it sounds, for some people it might sound like you're just saying that it's a pitch, but ultimately, yes, we are about making money. Don't get me wrong. That's basically maybe the main thing, right? But while we're making money, the reason we're making money is only because we're providing better housing, better opportunities for the workforce in the United States. And then obviously, I guess that trickles down to the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You're getting paid because you're creating value.
Can I add a little bit to that too? We think one of our missions or part of our mission is to help our investors become better investors and to help them improve their financial literacy, because that's something that's not taught in the schools of this country and it's so critical. And so we want them to be better investors for themselves and their families, to bring their children, their spouses into the program to help them learn more about that and to develop a personal legacy for them and their future generations. And so we like to refer them to people who we know that can help them do that. And it's not just about investing in our multifamily deal. It's about being a better, well-rounded investor, understanding how they can invest in some other products and things that will help them be better. So that's part of it as well.
Gotcha. That's absolutely awesome. Lennon and Stoney, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Best way to do it? Well, you can always send an email to either Stoney or myself. So both emails are Lennon@PassivoREI.com. You can have that on the show notes. And the Stoney's is Stoney@PassivoREI.com. So that's the most, I guess, direct way. But I'm also have to say that we have an ebook that we want to put out there for your listeners. It's free, of course. And that's also a way to get in touch with us. And not only that, but to understand a little bit how we think about achieving financial freedom and time freedom in this new world. It's like the book is called The Four Investing Rules for the New American Dream. And again, it's the way we see it. You just need to go to PassivoREI.com/dream. And you'll get it for free. And then we're on all the social media as well. We're on Instagram, PassivoREI, YouTube channel, PassivoREI, like just all across social media, really.
Right. And that's Passivo spelled PASSIVO.
Yes. So
if you're listening to this and you want to know how to spell it, PASSIVO.
Yes.
Lennon and Stoney, it's been great. Appreciate you guys coming on today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Sam, thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.